Being able to choose what school your children go to, is that something you place a premium on? The local comprehensive public school was the logical option when many of us were kids, but now more parents want to exercise their right to select a school, whether it be public or private or selective. And the government wants to encourage parents to exercise choice too through increased funding for private schools and other various policy levers. Now, choice might be valued by you as individual parents, but what does it mean for the broader social goals, perhaps, of education in this country? Is school choice building the values which we believe unite us in Australia, or could it in fact serve to divide us, even polarise us? Education researcher Dr. Christina Ho argues that school choice is working against multiculturalism. Students from different ethnic backgrounds no longer routinely meet each other at the local public school. They're being sent in all directions because of school choice. Wealthier parents may choose private schools, but now Christina's research is showing a division along ethnic lines too. And we're going to find out what she's observing. Should we be concerned about this? Is too much school choice working against what Christina describes as everyday or organic multiculturalism? Should we be trying to address this byproduct of school choice in Australia, these ethnic divisions across different schools? And we'd love your calls this morning, 1300 225 76 1300. You can tweet us at RN Life Matters or SMS us 0418 226 576. At live number again, 1300 225 76. WA, go to our listener line 0283 1430. Christina Ho is Senior Lecturer in Social Inquiry at the University of Technology, Sydney. Good morning.
Good morning, Natasha.
And we're going to be joined by a few other guests in a moment. So the Gonski Review confirmed that economic dividing, there's an economic division in schools. Students from lower socioeconomic backgrounds are concentrated in the public system. What have you been revealing about the ethnic divisions between schools?
The ethnic divisions are similar in that when you look at the public system, they do tend to be dominated by children from migrant backgrounds. And my research has focused on also the elite private schools in a place like Sydney, for instance, where a lot of elite private schools, the really, you know, high fee ones, are often very much dominated by people from Anglo-Australian backgrounds. And, you know, there really aren't a lot of people from migrant backgrounds in there at all. So you see this kind of ethnic segregation happening as well.
Mm. Well, just delve into that a little further for us. What school communities did you look at, and what sort of breakdown did you see along ethnic lines?
So for the latest research, I looked at an area in Sydney, the Lower North Shore. It's a very wealthy, leafy, lovely area of Sydney, middle-class, professional area. There's a large range of public, private and selective schools. And so looking first of all at the elite private schools, Tony Abbott's old school, which is St Ignatius College Riverview, has 5% of its students from a language background other than English. Mm. So, virtually no one. Down the road, we've got Monte San Angelo Mercy College in North Sydney, 6% from a language background other than English. Nearby, Queenwood School for Girls in Mossman, 2%. Mm. So we've got these very elite schools that are located in relatively multicultural suburbs, but with almost no representation of anyone who's not from an English-speaking background.
And what's happening in selective public high schools?
Yeah, so it's exactly the opposite. So if you, in often cases, it's, you know, a 10-minute walk up the road, and we've got schools like North Sydney Boys and North Sydney Girls, which are 91% and 92% students from a language background other than English, respectively. So that's the vast majority. And you really don't have a lot of kids there from an English-speaking background. So I just am quite, I was quite shocked to see the extent of that segregation within a very small area, a very, you know, multicultural area too.
So that's the North Shore of Sydney. And perhaps this is a story that's relaying across Australia, these ethnic divisions between public schools, private schools, selective high schools. And we're interested to hear your observations. Has it affected the choice you make in terms of what school you send your child to? 1300 225 76, that's 1300 call RN. Does the ethnic divisions between different school systems concern you or not? 1300 call RN. Now, you also, in a previous study, looked at lower socioeconomic areas as well and what's happening in the schools in those communities.
That's right. So the same pattern holds for pretty much all of... I looked at Sydney, metropolitan Sydney, and so in more disadvantaged areas of Sydney, you also have... public schools educating the majority of people from non-English speaking backgrounds, and the private schools are much more likely to be full of students from English speaking backgrounds. So it's interesting that, you know, the area of the Lower North Shore, which is a very wealthy area, actually is one of the more segregated areas. In other areas, It's to a more or lesser extent, but it seems that at this really elite level, the polarisation is quite dramatic.
Why do you think that polarisation is there? What's going on in the hearts and minds of parents from different ethnic groups?
Yeah, well, this this is a big question.
It is, and it's hard because it's all you end up making some generalisations and fulfilling some stereotypes, but sometimes they're there to fulfil.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not saying that the schools are actively excluding or discriminating against anyone. Mm. Obviously, to get into a selective school, you need to pass a test. It's a very competitive test. And with the kind of coaching that a lot of people from Asian backgrounds, you know, they get their kids into coaching from a very young age, from primary school, and a lot of Anglo-Australian families find that a bit off-putting. So there's that factor with the selective schools. With the private schools, obviously there's the fees, and a lot of people from migrant backgrounds just can't afford them. Although, but there are a lot of wealthy,
very wealthy migrant
Asian
families,
migrant,
and yet they're choosing. They're according to your data, saying, no, I don't want to send my child to a private school.
Mm.
Now, is that because they're observing something about the cultural milieu there, perhaps?
Well, it's all it's hard to say what started it, but certainly now, if you walk into one of these schools and you're from an Asian background, you don't feel like you're going to fit in. You know, like if you see this kind of, you know, vastly, it's a white environment, and I guess any Asian migrant family, a parent would have concerns about whether their kid was going to fit in. And, you know, it's no one intended for this to happen, but, you know, the same thing is happening in the selective schools. So if you're from an Anglo-Australian background and you walk into one of these schools and you see that 90% of the kids have Asian faces, you're also going to be worried about whether your kid is going to fit in. So we have this... kind of polarization, which is the social outcome of individual choices, and the individuals are not making choices to, you know, deliberately segregate people, but this is the social outcome that has happened.
Now, why does this concern you? Because you're making quite a strong argument against this segregation down ethnic lines across the school system.
I think it's crucial because for a lot of kids, for a lot of people, the first time that they really get a chance to know people from different cultural backgrounds is at school. You know, it's often people's first opportunity to meet people from very different backgrounds to themselves, to even develop friendships across cultural barriers, across class barriers. When you have schools that represent the community, then that allows for that to happen in a very natural way. If you have a school that doesn't represent the community, then the kids are really missing out on that opportunity to develop those kinds of, you know, understanding and friendships in that kind of everyday organic way.
You talk about schools being a sort of micro-public. I love that term.
Yeah. I mean, this is there's a lot of, you know, scholarship around this that shows that schools and other areas, but schools, because the kids are there every day, you know, the parents are there every day. School drop-offs, pick-ups, you see the same people, the same faces. You can't avoid them. And so it's that kind of every day you're forced to be there.
It's the real world.
That's right.
Unless it's not.
Well, exactly. Yes.
We're talking about schools today. Christina Ho from the University of Technology Sydney has done very interesting research suggesting that parental choice of schools is not just driving socioeconomic divisions within the school system, but it's clearly creating some dividing lines in terms of ethnicity of schools. And so, as her data suggests, many private schools are more Anglo, selective high schools are less Anglo, with kids of from language backgrounds other than English, and public high schools are more with kids with language backgrounds other than English. There's an acronym for that, but we'll avoid that. Let's take a call and then I'll bring in two other guests for comment on Christina's work. Margaret in Lindfield, good morning to you. You'd like to make a comment about St. Ignatius.
Oh, look, I would, and I will identify myself as a parent. First of all, I'd just like to say I really appreciate Christina's work and love the idea of our schools being as multicultural as possible. I just wanted to point out about St. Ignatius, and I did pose this question to the headmaster a couple of years ago, and I was just standing close to him on the sporting field, about the low numbers of Asian students, and he did recognise that and pointed out the fact that, unfortunately, where the school's positioned, there aren't a lot of Catholic Asian students applying to the school. To counter that, I just wanted to point out that the schools worked very hard at having a large proportion of refugee students and Aboriginal students. And I know that at the moment, the proportion of Aboriginal students at Riverview is almost identical to the proportion of Aborigines in Australia, a proportion of the population. And I just wanted Christina to be aware of that, because I don't think that was mentioned. It seemed to target more Asian students, the statistics that she was looking at.
But even so, that's not a cultural mix.
No, but it's certainly much more of a cultural mix that we'd have in the North Shore at large. And I think if you looked at the Aboriginal population in the North Shore, unfortunately, that would be vastly different from the good numbers that we have at Riverview. Absolutely, I couldn't agree more, but that we need more Asians and a more multicultural population in all our schools. But I did just want to point out that difference that isn't cited, I think.
Margaret, thank you very much for making the call. I appreciate it.
That's my pleasure.
And Daniel in Southport, Cooper Park High.
Cooper Park High, yes, it's my neighbourhood school.
Yeah, and what's the story there?
I think if you're a migrant coming to this area, you get directed to Keeper Park High School. And so as people come into the country, I know from my experience, I lived in Taiwan for 17 years, and when I returned to Australia, my children had learned, they only spoke Chinese. And when I came back to Australia, we were directed to Keeper Park High School. So the education system was designed so that we were to be funneled into Keeper Park High School, which is, and if you go past Keeper Park High School on any given day, it is completely non-native English speakers, almost the entire school. And then if you go up to the local Southport High School, that's a lot more balanced. And then there, around the corner here, we have a school called the Southport School, which is a very prestigious school, and it is all none. They're all local.
Anglo.
Not all. I wouldn't say Anglo, very Anglo, but I wouldn't say all. But
So that's sort of the story that Christina Ho's data represents. Does it concern you, that sort of segregation along ethnicity lines?
It's a form of apartheid. You can see it. It's very evident in this area. And then, of course, I know Keeper Park High School. My kids don't go there, but as a teacher, I have visited there. And, it's run down. So comparatively to the other schools, that school is very run down and the facilities are nothing like what, say, the Southport School is like or the Southport High School is like. But that's not a reflection on the teachers, but it's definitely a reflection on where the money's going.
Yeah. Yes, that's a very interesting observation. There's another outcome, perhaps, of these sorts of divisions that are happening. Thank you, Daniel, for sharing your story there in Southport.
Okay, thank you.
I'll take a call from Kate in Melbourne too. Now, what's your group that you're involved with as a president?
Oh, hi there. Thanks for taking the call.
Yeah.
Look, we're an alliance of 21 parent-driven public education campaigns. So, for instance, my one was in Coburg, and we campaigned for 5 years to get a public high school in our area as a result of many closures. And we talk about community more than race, and our aim is for, well, for a start, all schools to be funded to be good schools, and we're very much against the choice mantra of government and departments, because that tends to residualisation and maybe even the segregation you're talking about. So we aim for all schools to be good, and I'm really heartened that the school we've got opened in Coburg has been inundated with locals, but the full mix of the community, and that's why we're also not fans of selective schools, because that works against community, and it's very important to have that community partnership in a school, and also the opportunity for active transport if you attend your local school, and all the community building that stuff that goes with it.
Congratulations. Thanks, Kate.
Thank you.
And that's Kate from Coburg in Victoria. On Life Matters this morning, we're talking about the divisions within the school system that emerge after parents make a choice. And of course, a choice-driven system has been given great priority here in Australia, parents picking which kids, which school system their children go to. Now, that means that there are divisions down socioeconomic lines, but Christina Ho's work is suggesting that there are strong divisions now down ethnic lines, and I wonder if that's a concern for you. Or perhaps it's not. Or perhaps you've actually sent your child, as I know many parents who have, to a local public high school on the basis of exposing their children to a full multicultural mix, and that's important to them. Join us today, 1300 225 76, or 1300 call RN. You can SMS us on 0418 226 576. And I'd like to bring into the conversation now two other people who have given this great thought. Dr. Helen Proctor is Senior Lecturer in the Faculty of Education and Social Work over at the University of Sydney. She's co-author of School Choice, How Parents Negotiate the New School Market in Australia, and also A History of Australian Schooling. Good morning.
Good morning, Natasha.
And also on the line we have Noel Hadjimichael. He's the CEO of the New South Wales Parents Council. Now, they represent the parents of students in independent schools. Good morning to you, Noel.
Good morning, Natasha.
So, Helen, when you spoke to parents about school choice, did you pick up on this cultural dimension, these cultural divisions within the school system?
Yes, look, indeed we did. And in fact, parents were very nervous about talking about race and ethnicity. Often it was after, you know, we relaxed a bit into the interview, but they were quite conflicted. They had quite varying views. Some parents, as you suggested, very much valued this idea of the community high school, and really, in fact, a lot of parents really loved the idea of diversity. But parents often became nervous by what they saw as dominance of certain groups.
And what were some of their concerns?
Well,
and what sorts of groups?
Well, it was interesting. There were sort of roughly, we would say, three kinds of groups that our group of parents, and we were speaking to middle class parents who did have some choices. So one group that parents were nervous about were, you know, and I'm oversimplifying here, but like the rich Anglos, okay? So some parents were nervous about sending their kids to high fee schools because even though they could see the wonderful facilities and opportunities there, they were very nervous about the idea that their kid would be the, you know, feel like the poor kid or the kid that didn't have a sort of Australian dynasty in that school. So they were nervous about materialism and the sort of rich Anglo dominance.
Now, that's very attractive to some parents.
Yes, I think.
The old boys or old girls network.
Well, I mean, no one said we want to be there with rich people, but, you know, for some people, They felt that exposure to sort of other potential leaders in society, that kind of networking opportunity could be useful. Mm. Some people were nervous about the domination in selective schools, which is a big Sydney story, but it's also a story that's increasing in other cities, not so much in country areas like Brisbane and Melbourne. They were worried about the dominance of particularly East Asian and South Asian migrants feeling, and this came not only from Anglo parents, but some of the Chinese background parents that I spoke to said, look, I remember one lovely woman saying to me, we migrated to Australia to escape all this Chinese nonsense. And then here I am, you know, with my daughter in a school that is, you know, very much dominated by Chinese background people. Mm. But also there was nervousness, and this is where people were most hesitant to speak about, I guess, lower class or what they saw was troublesome ethnic groups that they felt were disadvantaged, that were rough, that where their children might, their safety might be at risk.
Interesting. Do you share Christina's concern that schools are becoming increasingly segregated along ethnicity lines?
Look, I think it's a problem. I always like to say to people that schools are doing a pretty good job. I mean, I think that's the baseline. We have a fantastic schooling system in Australia. We have a number of problems. Schools, really, all Australian schools have very strong civic programs, you know, about tolerance, about diversity. But I think it becomes a problem when the schools become more segregated than the surrounding society.
Why?
Because I think that schools are the places where we do mix with other people, as Christina says, where we mightn't like everyone in our school, but we do get to know that they're sort of ordinary people like us. And I think that, that's a big opportunity that we give our children. And if we want to build a really cohesive society, it's a very timely topic, a cohesive, multi-ethnic society in the future, our schools are a very good place to start.
It certainly is a timely topic. Noel Hadjimichael, the CEO of the New South Wales Parents Council, representing parents of students in independent schools. We've heard from Christina's research about the ethnic divide in Sydney schools, with private independent schools being considerably less culturally diverse, according to her subset of data. Does that concern you?
Natasha, firstly, just can I say, well done on Christina for tackling a very tough issue, a complex issue. And I do note that her research reflects some of the discussions that parents and community leaders are having at the moment. But we've always had a diverse schooling system in Australia. If you go back before the state aid debate was settled in the 1970s, there was the divide. But the divide was less racial in a more homogeneous society. It was between Protestant and Catholic. Mm. And you had a very strong argument that a universal schooling system would bring everyone together. But we do have, and I noted Helen's comment, that we have a great tradition with all of our schools of civil society programs, and we have that common curriculum, the common teacher education. You go to any school, regardless of the demography, the background of the students surrounding you, the approach and the direction of the education is universally of a very high standard.
But what about this idea that private schools have become a bastion of whiteness, as Christina puts it?
Well, living actually in the area that she did her study, I totally recognise that in the lower north shore of Sydney, there seems to be less balance. But you
is that acceptable?
Other parts.
Is that acceptable?
Well, I think it's a function of a more recent economic and residence changes. Mm. You look at places like Toowoomba, you look at Berwick, yeah, middle class area on the eastern side, in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne. You look at places like the Camden Valley, and you've got independent schools with two or three times as many students from a language background other than English than mainstream government schools. So it's a much more complex story, and interestingly, one of the growth areas of independent schooling is the Islamic school sector, where you have very large growth in enrolments, where parents are choosing a school which is the Australian curriculum, but with the cultural sensitivity. They want a school that will promote certain language and certain cultural affinity.
So in that sense, you believe that parental choice actually supports multiculturalism because it's honouring parental values.
I think it's a very important recognition that we're a culturally diverse society. We are all Australians. I mean, I remember my own upbringing in the southern suburbs of Bankstown. You know, it was an 85% public housing locality, and I was in the 10% of students who came from a background that wasn't English speaking.
Okay, all right.
And you look at that area now, it's completely different. So we do go through trends, we do go through stages. I think importantly, parents have a prior right to choose the kind of education that's given to their children. The United Nations Declaration of Human Rights spells that out. And I think as a society, we do a good job promoting a cohesive Australian perspective.
All right. Let's take some calls. We've only got a couple more minutes left, but I do want to squeeze in some of your calls. Bob in Ostermere in New South Wales. Good morning.
Good morning.
You were a teacher. You taught in both public and private systems.
That I did, yes. Mm-hmm. And I was a university lecturer associated with the children with learning difficulties and behaviour disorders.
And your observation of this conversation about ethnic divides in the school system?
Well, the main point I want to make, and I agree with some of the issues that have been raised. However, there's an elephant in the room which people seem to ignore at our peril, I believe. And the one major problem or element in the scenario which isn't addressed at all, really, is with behaviour disordered students. And my observation, having worked over 50 years in both public and private schools, is that there's a very powerful awareness amongst the public, or perhaps some of it's incorrect perceptions, but however, I do know, having been in the scene, that behaviour disordered kids are causing a major problem. Parents are aware of this.
What's this got to do with ethnicity,
I'm talking about the factor that is moving children out of public schools into private,
right.
And that's what you're dealing with. And what I'm telling you is that the element in the situation which isn't addressed is just that.
Yes, indeed.
And it's very handily ignored. And to be frank, there's no programs of real consequence to negate this sort of behaviour problem in regular classrooms. And I'll mention one other thing.
No, I've got to let you go, Bob, actually, but it's great. Look, if you could get on our website, though, and post a comment there, we'd love to hear more. But I think that's a great issue to follow up on, actually, because parents do pick schools on the basis of peer group, and peer group is a lot more than culture. It's about behaviour and discipline and all those vital questions. Emma in Brisbane, good morning to you.
Oh, hi, Natasha.
Yes, you've got two kids in public school in Brisbane.
Yes, I have. We are in a situation where we could afford to send our kids to private schools. In fact, my ex-husband pushed very hard for my sons to be the fourth generation of going through his elite school in Brisbane. But after some negotiation, I managed to successfully convince him that a co-ed and diverse community was probably going to round out the boys a bit more in preparation for life to come.
Okay. Any comments from our guests on your call?
Oh, that's very interesting that, yes, some parents do definitely choose for diversity. I think what's really coming through, though, is that we keep talking about parents, and there's an English sociologist that's coined the term parentocracy, and I think often that we talk a lot about parents and not enough about kids and about the collective rather than the individual.
And that's your concern, Christina Ho.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's obviously individual parents make the choices that are best for their individual kids. I'm trying to look at the bigger picture as to what are the social outcomes of all these, you know, accumulated individual choices. And really, if you look across Australia, there are some pretty disturbing trends that yes, our suburbs are quite divided. You know, we have rich suburbs, poor suburbs, suburbs that are dominated by one group of migrants or, you know, Anglos. But even within those suburbs, the schools are more segregated than the suburbs. So if we have that going on, the schools are not doing anything to try and even things out. In fact, they're making the situation worse. So this is also for socioeconomic status as well as ethnicity. On both counts, our schools are more segregated than our suburbs that are already quite segregated.
If this concerns you, what should be done about it?
Well, schools are obviously governed by our government policies, and I think that we've had many, many governments, federal and state, that have really focused more and more on school choice, on creating this kind of marketplace for schooling. So rather than, say, a generation ago, as you mentioned, the default thing was to send your kid to the local public school. Nowadays, you know, for some middle-class parents, you're almost seen as a bad parent to do that. You know, if you haven't shopped around, because now as a parent you're a consumer of schooling, if you haven't shopped around, you're almost negligent in your duties. So that the outcome of the sort of mentality of pushing choice is that people are choosing to send their kids to places that obviously they think are going to be best for their kids.
Academically perhaps, but although there's sport, there's extracurricular programs, all sorts of things inform that choice.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things that go into the choice, but the bigger picture is that individual choices are leading to social segregation.
That's where we have to leave today. I would have liked to have got back to Noel for a final comment from you, but let's pick it all up again another day. And thank you so much to Christina Ho for initiating this discussion with her research from the Faculty of Arts and Social Sciences at UTS,
thanks,
at the University
Natasha.
Of Technology, Sydney. Helen Proctor, Senior Lecturer in the Faculty of Education and Social Work at
thank
the University
you,
of Sydney. And Noel Hadjimichael, CEO of the New South Wales Parents Council. They represent independent schools, or parents of kids in independent schools. Thanks, Noel.
Thanks.
And look, pour all your responses onto our Facebook page, our website, and our listener feedback line, particularly if you were listening from WA, 0283333 1430. In fact, everyone, ring that number now if an issue's come up for you and you'd like to make a comment, and we'll try and get it to air throughout the week. 0283333 1430. Natasha Mitchell with you this morning. Up next, Amity Dry from The Block. She's hit the musical trail. It's a great story.